Crumbs and Filth, the Citizen Kane of podcasting. Modern man is confronted with so many movies. Which ones are films?
And which ones are filth?
At number 81, it's the film that literally no one remembers.
I already forgot it. I saw it last night. I saw the last third last night. It's 2000s Dungeons and Dragons. It's for Films and Filth. That's us. Who are the people here?
Hello, I am Luke.
Right, just
we did
play it twice. You'll get it. I'm Matt. I get my own introduction.
And today we're joined by probably the one of us who's done the most role-playing.
Hello.
It's Merci. Am I saying it right? Hello. Merci. Merci.
Yeah.
Okay.
Merci.
I've now That's had on three occasions, by the way, where I'm talking, I mention you or, and or Luke to my wife, and I'll say Merci. And she's like, who is that? Oh, Merci. Like if I say
yeah, because you have to say like Japanese katakana for her.
Yeah, yeah. Well, remember, that's also kind of more correct too, right? So yeah, it's just kind of funny. I guess some people would only know me as Mato and not Matt. So
Well, Matt, do you remember that friend you had who I was hanging out with the first time we went to Japan and I was talking about the movie Akira, but I didn't know how to pronounce it correctly, so I kept saying Akira. And I was like, you know Akira? And he was like, oh, I thought you were talking about Honda Acura. No, here's, and then he pulls out all the manga of Akira. He's like, okay,
yeah, he's got like the original ones from like the 80s first print or something. But just a little change of pronunciation, he couldn't understand it.
yeah. One I always think about is when I went to like a drive-through with Rob, and it would literally be, I'd be like, he's like, what do you want? I'm like, double cheeseburger, and he turns to the cashier and he's like, double cheeseburger on a kajimas. And if you don't live in Japan, that sounds like he's putting on a racist accent.
No, but it's like
they. And it's like, no, if he doesn't say it like that, they don't know what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. That's correct. Probably a five-timer story here, but it's been a while. It's been 2 years since you told it, so you can have it.
I probably told it back when this was a different podcast.
Well, there was that time that, Matt, you and I went to that Indian restaurant, and you ordered cheese anon, and I was just trying really hard not to laugh. Because
Yeah, anyway, that's
we got
how
it
rolls.
We got the cheese anon. It was great.
Dungeons & Dragons 2000. So, for folks that are wondering, let's just say we will be talking about the newer one as well.
I don't think we can fill an hour on this one.
And my viewing, so just it's been a while since I told you how many viewings. The 2001 took three separate viewings, after which I could not for my life tell you what the story was. Then I watched the new one in one sitting, ordered the Blu-ray 30 minutes before it finished, and I was like, hey, at every moment in this, you know what their goal is and what they're doing. How nice is that after watching the 2001? But before I just take a giant crap on the 2001, just to throw out the thing I loved the first time I seen it, was Jeremy Irons screaming gibberish. Yeah, I'll take that all day. Thank you.
Yeah, there was like...
Who's that guy?
Jeremy Irons was the baddie. We'll be talking about him later. There was... So I watched the 2001 back when it came out because my dad was a big D&D kid. Like, he was a teenager in the 70s and 80s. So he was mega into Dungeons & Dragons. He made his own sci-fi RPG and, like, drew it all on paper and stuff. So when this film came out, he was pretty excited. I just remember we watched it once, and then I think the words Dungeons & Dragons were never mentioned in our house again. It just, like... killed his enthusiasm.
Oh, no, that's so sad.
So,
I had only seen like one scene of friends of mine on occasion have this, they have these parties where they have two TVs set up in different rooms and everybody brings VHS tapes and we play specific scenes for like 5 minutes and just kind of vote on what's the best one. And someone brought a VHS of this movie and just played the part where Jeremy Irons was screaming like a insane person towards the end and dragons are just flying around PS1 dragons. So I kind of thought this might be fun or good, and I was wrong. This was not fun or good. It was not At one point, I yelled "fuck you" at my TV.
I don't know if this is the film I liked the least or like enjoyed the least, but just on a pure technical filmmaking skill level, this is the worst film we've covered, I think.
I agree. This beats The Fog for me. This is worse than The Fog.
I mean, I was thinking, I was like, man, I wish I was watching In the Name of the King instead, which is rarely spoken by people, but I meant them sincerely and authentically.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure. I think I preferred watching this to the experience of watching Bucky Larson, because watching a comedy that has no funny moments is very painful. Mm. I preferred watching this to watching like Once Upon a Time in America, just because that went on for a million years and was depressing. But otherwise, like, this was just me and Mercy was turning each other all the way through. Like, she's like, this didn't come out in cinemas, right? This is straight to this is children's TV, right?
And I'm like, no. That thought went through my head.
And we literally, I literally opened it up and I was like, holy fuck, $45 million budget.
This is, I went deep on this because the story of the making of this is much more interesting than the story within the movie.
Do tell.
This guy named Courtney Solomon, when he was about 19, he started taking business meetings about trying to get the rights to Dungeons and Dragons. There's some amount of pretending that he was something that he wasn't. I don't know how much I can allege on this, but it seems like fraud adjacent. So then basically the woman who was appointed by Gary Gygax to control TSR, which was the company that ran Dungeons and Dragons before Wizards of the Coast bought that company, just basically fought him on everything, including that Francis Ford Coppola and James Cameron allegedly wanted to direct this, and she said no to them. And then at some point, the board in charge of Dungeons and Dragons made him direct this, and also made him use a script that had been rejected years prior. I didn't find details on that or where the script came from, but definitely I've seen a bunch of interviews with him where he says things like, oh, well, everybody said you should direct, so I said, sure, I'll direct it. And that's like not what happened. Joel Silver, who just produced The Matrix, also put up a ton of money for this. That's basically how they got the big budget, because it was something like...
Oh, yeah. My last note here, Mark, by the way, is just my very last note is, does anybody want to talk about Joel Silver after I saw his name plastered on the screen? producer Joel Silver. Anyone want to talk about that? Okay. So we do.
I don't know anything about producers. You guys are the producer guys.
You guys are talking just random.
Have you seen Tropic Thunder?
Yeah.
Imagine Tom Cruise's character.
Okay, cool.
It's basically guys raising money, and this is sort of the perfect example of I always love bringing up how, you know, studio interference, corporate interference ruins everything. This is just corporate fuckery making a movie. Like, it's just basically
that makes a lot of sense what you said about how like they made him just pull out some old rejected script, because I literally said to Mercy, every single line in this film is the first draft version of a line.
Yeah,
like the part where there's no subtlety, there's no human character. It's just like, this is my opinion. This is the moral of this story. Here is this law. Like, one of the first lines the sidekick character says is, things are the way they are and you can't change them.
So yeah, basically he had to raise this much money because they wouldn't agree to doing a made-for-TV film, but the two sequels were, I guess, out of necessity, made for TV. And then Hasbro bought Wizards of the Coast many years later. And when they were gearing up to make what became Honor Among Thieves, that process started years ago. That was kind of in development hell itself for a while. But Solomon's production company sued them because he was like, we have the rights to this. But everybody knows that to keep the rights to a property, you have to make theatrical films every so often. Mm. And they were like, well, you didn't make a theatrical film 5 years after. And in fact, he hadn't made any theatrical films after 2000. So naturally, they lost that fight and probably better off. So I don't know. That's kind of the abridged version.
I guess we should establish our bona fides on the gaming before we get too deep into this particular dungeon and dragon.
Well,
I've never played like a proper tabletop RPG. I went straight to the computer. Played text adventures. I played Zork, Planetfall, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy text adventure. I did those as at least you guys on the call know. I had a weird obsession through 90s JRPGs, so I played like half of those. Regular guest Andrew and I do remember in the late 80s when we were kids, we ordered the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles role-playing book, which came, we were going to play it. We weren't going to do Dungeons and Dragons. That wasn't our thing. I mean, not that we were like, it's too geeky. We were like 11 years old at the time. Just like, we really like the turtles and we want more content. And before we were recording, Mark was talking about how when the cartoon premiered, people that already knew it were like, oh, no. So the role-playing game was in the style of the comic book and we got it. And we're instantly, completely, and utterly confused by it and never played it. So that's my analog
RPG. Like I said, my dad was a tabletop RPG guy. So I played with him a bit as a kid. And then more recently, me and Matt's mutual friend Alan loves DMing RPGs. So I played with him like 3 or 4 times. The problem was me and Matty just wanted to do classic D&Ds, let us go on an adventure, kill some goblins, fight a dragon. And he wants to do all these obscure RPGs that he's really into, where we're playing like Children of Gods or whatever. Oh. And it's like, okay, fine. So I would always just make these characters who were like prostitute vampires or something, just so that I could make Matty really uncomfortable by flirting with him through the whole RPG. But yeah, we did a few one-shots and stuff that were fun. But most of my experience is just like reading monster manuals and just like reading lore books and stuff, because I love monsters and lore and stuff like that. And so a friend of the show's, Gary and Cole, they were on a game show a little while back. They used to do a podcast called Monster in My Podcast, where they would just like review a D&D monster every week, which was really fun.
That's fun.
And now they're doing Real Lich Hours, which is their Baldur's Gate 3 podcast. So they're big D&D guys. So I've sort of absorbed a lot of D&D through osmosis, even though I haven't had much chance to play it myself. But yeah, D&D fans should check out them, or check out the Game Show episode they were on, because I did do a D&D round.
That's right.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time in like comic book stores. I was definitely on that realm of geek. And, you know, half of those stores are the figures and stuff for RPGs, but I didn't know what I was looking at, you know, basically. Mm-hmm. So I was all comic book, no role playing.
Yeah, I spent a lot more time playing like Warhammer or board games, because I guess more of my friends were into playing that. Whereas the RPG, it takes a certain kind of person, because most of the game is just happening in your head, right?
Mm.
But when I played in like the recent years, it was like me, like Rob's like a real theater kid. So we would like play little characters. One of them, I played like an Irish priest. So that's kind of fun.
See, I just bungled myself by conflating the two, you know, that would certainly offend somebody. Huh.
Well, this is also a better story than the story of this movie. When I was about 12 years old, I basically had two friends, and they didn't really have very many friends either. I think we were basically just the only people that any of us hung out with, you know, nerd stuff. Mm-hmm. At one point they decided that they were going to play D&D with me. I didn't know anything about it. So basically the guy who was DMing just constantly just tricked me and beat up on me the entire time so that the two of them would laugh at me. So I was like, oh, well, okay, fuck you guys. And I decided to never play it again.
I'm sorry, man, that's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, well, it was one of those things. The thing is, I did kind of get into BattleTech for a while, which is more my thing, really, robots. But the stuff that Luke was just talking about, the weird one shots, is actually what got me back into RPGs in adulthood, because I had a group of friends who were doing that, and we played one that was like, there's one that's like lobsters that drive trucks or something, and there's one where I think there was one that I thought was my favorite one, where I think it was everyone is just 9 different personalities inside of a guy. and the guy is just trying to do things like get up out of bed and brush his teeth, but you have to do all these. It's just is insanity. That kind of reflects the indie games that I that I favor. But also, I mean, as far as video games, I played Super Mario RPG the first time when I had mono. I was like, well, I have all the time in the world now, so I played Super Mario RPG, got into it, Chrono Trigger, which became one of my favorite games, a couple other Super Nintendo ones. This is like 2001, but yeah, so wildly spotted RPG history, I guess.
Okay. Oh! I see on the leg and I yanked the headphones out. Hilarious.
So Mercy, you've got more than a long history, right?
Yeah, I was like, what is it?
You I was just going to be like, instead of the headphones out.
So me, myself, I am a big RPer. I love RPing. I RP to this day. But I, so Dungeons and Dragons was the very first, like, tabletop. You say tabletop?
Yeah.
Okay, the very first tabletop game that I played back in college. And I had a really long campaign with a couple of friends. Like, one of our players, he had to leave the country because he was gonna move to Australia. And this, oh my God, I still think about it. That session when we had to say goodbye to his character, we were all crying. Oh. It was so intense. And then eventually, like, we stopped playing and then we finished a couple years later because we were like, you know, everybody left, things like that. And our DM was the most amazing guy, an amazing storyteller. And then I got into DMing myself, but I don't DM Dungeons and Dragons because it's too complicated for me. So that's the thing with Dungeons and Dragons. Like, you have to know the rules, and like, just making a character takes an entire day. So, well, I mean, also for the other RPGs, I guess. But like, I'm more into World of Darkness.
Right.
So games like Changeling, like Vampire the Masquerade, like Geist, like Mage, The Awakening, like those kind of games I'm really into. And I was DMing a table. I don't know how long it lasted. It lasted a couple, maybe a year or like less than a year. But it was like every single week I would meet my friends and I would DM. But here's the thing. I don't care about the rules. I don't care if it's like, oh no, you have to use this die, whatever. No. Like, show it to me. You want to convince myself, like, I don't know, you want to convince me that you want to get this item, okay, then role play it, go ahead. And then I'll allow it or I won't allow it. And I gave a lot of like permissions to my players because I want them to have fun. So I know that all of my players, and I don't know if they're ever gonna hear this, but all of my players were horny. All of them. So all of them wanted like a hot character there, and I was like, I'll give you that, but then you're gonna have to like really do your best if you want to seduce this dude or this girl. So it was a lot of fun. And then I had this one table online because I moved to Japan and I wanted to make it like a supernatural creatures in Mexico, but also in the border. So it was like
was anyone a chupacabra?
No, I wish. It was like vampires, like vampire narcos. But I mean, the table, it was difficult for because of the time difference, and then we couldn't continue, but I miss it. I miss table, like DMing so much. It was so much fun. Yeah. But I am, and also I LARPed. I was a big LARPer. I would LARP for maybe 2 years every single weekend.
2 years every weekend?
Yeah.
Like in Narnia?
Huh?
What? Every weekend for 2 years.
What did I say?
I got it.
2 years every weekend.
Like... Oh, no, sorry.
I'm being a dick.
I'm sorry. Yes, you are.
Well, God, I wish I could go LARP in a closet for 2 years every weekend. That'd be amazing.
I'm sorry.
Sounds better when you say it, Narnia.
Before I forget,
it
Mercy.
Sounds better when you say what you said, but I don't think.
Before I forget, Mercy, have you played Morkborg?
No.
Are you familiar with it?
No. Sounds like fun.
It's just extremely evil looking, where everything looks like an intensely black, evil screaming demon, and you're supposed to burn the book after you're done or kill all your characters. I do want to play this. I've never DM'd before, and I'm like circling it. I know if I try to rope people in, I'm gonna have to learn.
I would love to play that game.
I do want to play Call of Cthulhu one day as well.
Call of Cthulhu is really fun. It really messes up with your head, but it's fun. There was this also, I guess you guys would be interested in like Dungeon and World of Darkness, especially because it's like modern supernatural stuff, but especially Geist. Geist is about like, have you guys know the anime Shaman King? Do you guys know? Have you,
seen it? I haven't seen it.
No? Okay. It's about people.
Shaman King.
Oh, I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Okay. So it's about like people who have like spirits. It's like JoJo in a way. but in the game, guys, you died and you come back to life because you made a pact with a ghost.
Mm. Oh, I think one of our characters was a Geist in one of the ones we did with Alan. I remember when our friend Alan, who did the DMing that I played recently, since he left our company, he's been doing like D&D streams with some group. And Matt was just telling me like, oh yeah, I tried to watch a bit of it and it was just this one woman talking and Alan didn't even talk. And I was like, Matt, it sounds like probably she was the DM and you just watched a bit where she was explaining something. And he's like, oh, right, yeah, I don't know how this works.
He was like, watch it. So I did. And then I didn't know what was happening at all.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark, you got a tale for this movie version, which we'll continue to probably avoid and talk about the actual games and the newer one. But let's do it.
I think we've all got a type 5 on the movie we want to get through as well.
Cursed description. In the Empire of Izmir, the evil mage Brofion would like to depose the Empress Savina and lock her in a dungeon, and dragons could help him do it if only he could receive the Rod of Savril, which makes dragons bend to the user's whim. Brofion then sends his right-hand man, Damodar, in desperate pursuit of the Rod. Marina, a young mage, is given a map to find the Rod by her mentor, Vilden. As he's murdered by Damodar, she then escapes and enlists a pair of thieves named Ridley and Snails, as well as a dwarf named Elwood, to find and take the Rod. Marina's party then finds out that they have to get a ruby called the Eye of the Dragon. They escape Damodar and find a maze where Ridley is able to complete a challenge to get the ruby. Damodar shows up again and captures Marina and the map. With the help of an elf named Norda, the other three penetrate Damodar's camp. Ridley rescues Marina, but is unable to save Snails when Damodar grabs him firmly from behind, penetrating him until he expires while both of them breathe heavily. After some passionate screaming, Ridley is also impaled by Damodar, but Marina is able to save his life with magic. Snails is still dead. Meanwhile, Brofion appears before the Senate and Liberty dies with thunderous applause. In a dungeon, our heroes have arrived to receive the Rod, but only Ridley is able to proceed because magic or something. He comes across a thick skeleton made of stiff bones. He tells Ridley that he's been waiting for ages for someone to come receive his cursed Rod. Ridley barely has time to caress the Rod before Damodar arrives and takes the Rod from him violently. He opens a throbbing portal to bring the Rod to his master, Brofion, and Ridley pursues him. The Empress is attempting to use her own rod to control dragons, but when Brofion has the huge intimidating Rod of Savril, he overpowers her. However, Ridley is able to turn the tables on Damodar and dominate him. Then Ridley's friends show up and help him wrestle the rod away from Brofion. Ridley smashes the rod because it's evil rather than becoming cursed while using it to destroy Profion's anus. The Empress has a dragon swallow Brofion instead. Then the Empress declares everyone equal and prejudice officially over forever. Hooray. Also, the Eye of the Dragon erases Snail's name from his headstone and then opens a portal that everyone can enter to go see their friend in the cliffhanger dimension or something. The end.
Well, people were waiting with bated breath.
He did cover pretty much everything, and the film still doesn't make fucking sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. At one point when you were describing the maze, I was like, oh yeah, that part was good. Oh wait, no, that was the newer movie again.
yeah, the new that movie was actually
when we got to the maze bit in this movie, I was like, okay, I'm at least somewhat enjoying this now because things are happening on screen.
Yeah.
The new, in retrospect, this movie makes the new movie feel like it was taking a shit all over it, which is funny. Yeah. Because they say Honor Among Thieves more times in this movie than in the movie called Honor.
I know. Yeah, you're right. What about Honor Among Thieves?
Yeah.
So, okay. I'm going to go through some of my biggest beefs with this film.
Okay, go ahead.
the whole plot is like, oh, there's this prejudice between mages and commoners. I guess they're using commoner like muggle. But like that word already means something. But they literally never show anything. Like, oh, they're like, oh yeah, there's oppression. We don't see any. Everyone seems to be going about fine.
Well, they get rid of it at the end of the movie, so it's okay.
But like, if you're making a film about, you know, this underclass fighting to be free, you have to show us what the oppression looks like. It looked like everyone was clean and happy and living in a city. Yeah. Like,
the oppression is that thieves go, I don't trust you, mage.
Yeah, if anything, the only prejudice I saw was against mages.
Could you imagine playing a fucking game of D&D where you're just like trying to play role play and then somebody's like, oh, a likely, yeah, like I'm gonna follow you, mage. Like everybody's just screaming
I'm sure
at
this
each
has
other.
Happened. I'm sure that happened.
I mean, sure, but
that would be funny. Everybody else in the party would be like, whoa, chill.
It reminds me of one of the one shots where we were role playing something where it was like the captain of the ship was dead. And we were in a spaceship and I kept being like, we should throw the captain's corpse out of the ship. And everybody started like freaking out because like, wait, why? Why do you want to throw the captain's corpse out of the ship? I'm like, we got to get rid of his corpse. I didn't have any reason. Sometimes
it's going to start to smell. It's going to get like smelly. You don't want to be in a tin can with a corpse.
I was trying
sense.
To be evil. Exactly. Look, just I was trying to be evil because it's fun. Sometimes it's fun when you have an evil guy that's in, like I was trying to make the story better. But,
that's the one saving grace of this movie. The evil guy's fantastic. Yeah, okay. I want to talk about Jeremy Irons. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
I swear.
Anything you want to say?
Yeah, we were just quoting Jeremy Irons yesterday before we even realized he was in this film. Have you seen his interview when gay marriage was about to be introduced?
Oh no, where is this going?
He's like, well, could a father not marry his son? And then the guy's like, oh, well, there are laws against incest. But it's not incest between men.
Okay, so we'll try not to express personal life too much in this.
Yeah.
I don't think Simon Gruber
he's like a huge homophobe or anything. I think he's just a confused old man who said something really dumb in an interview.
Yeah, but he's going to haunt him forever.
Yeah. I can't hear his voice without hearing that quote. It's so funny.
Oh my God.
Interestingly, he did a quote where he had a quote where he was just like, someone asked him why he did this movie and he said, are you kidding? I just bought a castle and I have to pay for it. And
that makes sense.
Basically, the next movie we do is going to involve someone who shouldn't have bought a castle.
I see. You're correct.
Why?
Also, another connection is that Marlon Wayans was filming this at the same time as Good List movie Requiem for a Dream.
Right. That's awesome. Because I was trying to track, like, we just saw him recently in that. And I'm like, oh, yeah. How does this track at the same time? That's fantastic.
I would assume that he was probably, his character is probably killed off because he was like, look, man, I've got this groundbreaking,
much
really
better film
movie to do.
And Luke saying that.
That's probably how he perceived it. I didn't.
Oh, okay.
Well, I still think that film was boring and shit.
Go ahead.
I'll take the new Dungeons & Dragons movie over Requiem for Dream for sure. Anyway, go ahead, Mercy.
Oh, no, it's like you read a very compelling summary of the plot. You know, horny one.
I was role playing.
Oh, thank you. That was really good. You convinced me. Yesterday I was telling Luke, this movie's very gay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it has a lot.
There's a lot of like one character's right in front of the camera and the other character's behind them. They're like,
and they're making like weird faces, and it's always like, I mean, it's always nice to see representation, I guess. And also, I wanted to say, what's the name of the guy with the blue lipstick again? Draco.
Damodar.
He served in that movie. Yeah. He served.
He's also the one actor who comes back for the two straight to DVD sequels.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought he was like not a bad villain. I mean, that were a crap movie.
The
experienced
movie
actor
was,
is good.
So like him, Jeremy Irons, that Thief's Guild guy.
Yeah,
Riff Raff from Rocky Horror.
Yes, I was about to say, I was very happy to see Richard O'Brien from Rocky Horror as the Thief's Guild guy, simply because he's not in that many movies.
Right, but like,
yeah,
those actors were the kind of actors who can rise above a shit script.
Mm.
But the main cast and like Marlon Wayans, they I'm sure they could all be good in something good.
Yeah.
But they were like trying to chew their way through George Lucas dialogue and it was terrible.
Hmm. What's the name of the snail?
Snails? Marlon Wayans.
Marlon Wayans.
Hmm.
He's really good in White Chicks.
He's good in other stuff. He's a funny guy.
He's good. Yeah, actor.
He can't take a script like this and make it good.
No. he's not even funny. Like, I'm like, man, I didn't even laugh.
It reminded me of the sort of the Richard Pryor Superman 3 thing.
The what?
Superman 3, they brought in comedian Richard Pryor.
Hmm.
But the story I've heard is that the Superman writers were like, we can't tell Richard Pryor how to be funny. We'll let him do his own thing. And Richard Pryor was like, I'm making a Superman movie. I can't go a script. So he's just not funny through the whole film.
The poster for that movie is insane because it's this immaculately crafted drawing of Superman carrying Richard Pryor and flying. Another thing along the lines of the Tom Baker was offered Gandalf in Lord of the Rings and he turned it down for this because it's a shorter flight for him to Canada than to New Zealand.
And he turned down Gandalf for this?
He has publicly stated he does not regret.
Incredible guy.
Oh yeah, that's true, but still.
Yeah.
I love Tom Baker and I loved him in this. Because Tom Baker, he's made a whole career of taking shit scripts and making it sound amazing. So
yeah. So
also, how much money were they offering him for either job? You know, we don't know.
Possibly more for this because
that's what I'm saying. Like, if it's like we'll give you this for this and that for Lord of the Rings, which was not a proven, you know, property in 2000.
I was surprised to learn the timeline that this wasn't made in the wake of Lord of the Rings.
Wait,
no, this is
how
I assumed
this happened.
I guess this is the last of the old school fantasy movie because, you know, we did Legend a little while back, right? Would you put this more in with Lord of the Rings or with Legend? I mean,
this kind of is like pre Lord of the Rings fantasy, you're right.
This was at the time the most expensive independent movie ever made. So you look at it that way.
They probably should have got in the studio to back them.
there were mistakes were made. Anyway, taglines for this movie.
Lord of the Rings did have a considerably higher budget.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, if Tom Baker had made that, then he would have had to make the Hobbit movies, right? So,
yeah.
The taglines for this movie are, this is no game. Adventure hinges on more than just a throw of the dice. Adventure will never be the same. The game has just begun. And it's no game! Exclamation point.
That's literally the same marketing they used on the Super Mario Brothers
movie.
Yeah.
And they're contradicting
each other.
This ain't
no game, it's a live action thrill ride.
It's the same
they're contradicting problem, themselves right? in their taglines.
Yeah.
There's contradicting taglines. I mean, it's no game. The game is just beginning. Wait, you just said it's no game. What are you doing?
Yeah.
It's not as big a problem. I mean, the Super Mario Brothers movie was like, look, we just have to be as little like the game as possible. And that was a problem for them. I mean, I still think it's interesting. I still really
like that movie in a weird way.
Yeah,
but
I want a Mario
one?
Game
yeah.
like
oh, yeah,
that.
Same.
I want a Mario game like that. That's like a.
Yeah,
I hope the Switch 2 launches with that. It's just like the life like
Super Mario Bros. The movie, the game, 35 years late.
Yeah.
So
yeah, dude,
I do enjoy the newer one, The Honor Among Thieves, but there is a part of me that just thinks like, I don't actually think Dungeons & Dragons is a good property to adapt. Because all Dungeons & Dragons is just generic fantasy. The point of it is it's a rule set to create your own stories.
Exactly. There are so many ways you can...
So, like, making a Dungeons & Dragons film is basically just the same as making your own original fantasy film.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I watched that movie for sure. Of course, I have no background in Dungeons & Dragons, so of course that's how I watch it. I was thinking more of Lord of the Rings or something. For me, you know, it's 9 at night. I just finished the 2001. I'm like, oh my god, and then it's just 2:15. Oh my god, you know? I was definitely not coming in a good frame of mind, and it very quickly, charmed me out of that. So,
would you assume as you saw Captain Kirk's face?
Yes, that's right.
the thing
I want to get into a closet with Chris Pine.
Well, yeah, why not? The thing about...
I want to get
the
stuck in a Jeffrey's tube with him.
The thing about Honor Among Thieves is when I was watching it, I was thinking to myself towards the end of it, it does kind of go on for a while, even though I think it maintains a really good pace. Hmm. I was actively thinking to myself, man, how are they going to make a sequel if they're putting so much stuff into this first movie? And I don't know if that's, I think that's my brain is poisoned by too many sequels and I should not be thinking about sequels. But, yeah. You know, it's the thing is, I get all these things because they're in so many other RPG, like video games, like Mimics and, I don't know, Bird People, all this stuff is, they're Bird People in Zelda games. You know, this, yeah. there's a lot of just fantasy language. I don't know if I prefer that to the Lord of the Rings movies. Matt, would you take that over Lord of the Rings?
Matt hasn't properly watched the Lord of the Rings movies yet, so his opinions are not valid.
Okay.
I can't argue with that.
Matt watched the first one, turned to his dad and said, "This is just dudes staring at each other," and never went back.
I think the simplest... Like
ironically,
maybe...
I do have the extended editions on Blu-ray right there, but I've only seen one of the two towers, so that's where I am.
Well, the second tower will fall eventually. I remember the
rumors when that film came out were they were going to change the name.
Oh yeah,
it would have made
it was
a lot
like
of sense.
Right after.
Yeah, that's the name of the book, no?
Yeah,
it's the name of the book. Nemo, Shoganai.
If you change the name of that film, the terrorists win.
That's what he changes the name of the film to. The terrorists won.
They renamed Aragorn Osama bin Laden.
Hey, before we go completely off of the actors, we were talking how there's the steady hands that are watchable, even though the script is terrible and the production is terrible and the youngies who can't handle it. Where do you put Thora Birch? She's a pretty good actor who at this point has no gravitas. Because
which one was
like,
she
was the empress.
What
oh,
was
yeah,
the
she
deal?
Won some awards for this. Oh, I don't know.
No, she's a serious good. Actor, you know, so I was like, but
Mercy
was
loved
like,
her like costumes.
Oh, she looked yeah. so good.
But she's like 20 when they made this, so she's younger than the young cast, right? And I was like,
she
oh,
looks
yeah.
15.
She had completed
so young.
She had completed American Beauty, which is like way up on the good list before this, before she did this. I don't understand her performance unless she is straight up fucking with the director because she doesn't like him.
I think they were trying really hard to make her Queen Amidala.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
But also like, look at the fucking lines she was trying to get through. I think she did a pretty admirable job.
Okay. Yeah. That's where
every
going,
single
like...
line in this film was like, one clause too long. They don't know how to write sentences that humans speak.
They don't.
The time that I screamed fuck you at my TV was when the dwarf is told that he's not going to get paid right away, and then it slowly zooms in on his face for like 10 seconds.
Yeah, it zooms in on his face, then he does a line, then it zooms in a bit more, and he does a grunt, and then it zooms in a bit more, and he does an expression.
He says, quote, "That's a terrible way to do business."
Oh yeah, I remember.
Which
he
is not
says,
something
that
humans
business.
Say.
And then a little bit later, he goes,
"Huh." Yeah, unbelievable.
Like, a funnier line would have just been just do the facial expression and cut. But no. Also, right. So that was the other beef I wanted to get to. They don't really explain how that dwarf ended up in their party.
Mm-mm.
He doesn't do anything in the whole film. Nope. And he's like the same height as the woman. He's barely a dwarf.
He's your friend that's off eating Cheetos in the corner and not really engaging with the game.
He's like the John Rhys Davies you have at home.
Yeah.
I did think that the what was the lady who has played Marina?
Marina?
She was really going
Mercy
for it.
Mercy was very
credit.
Pissed off with that character.
I didn't like.
Oh, really?
Because she's a powerful mage. And there's an hour in the middle of the film where she forgets she can do magic and just screams and gets captured over and over again. Oh, and then suddenly at the end, she remembers she can do magic in the finale.
Like, and also another thing that I don't like is that, the trope of like powerful women who suddenly forget they're powerful when they are captured and the male sidekick, whatever, has to save them. That's one thing. Another thing is like, you start the movie with her wearing glasses. She looks like her hair is up, you know, and she's like the librarian. And then immediately after she, no more glasses. She doesn't need them. Her hair long and luscious. And it's like, wow, look at her. She's attractive now. And I'm like, man, okay, cool. Then what's up?
Yeah.
Then what's the situation?
She should have been the the lead of this. She should have been the hero. There's no, it made no sense that the one guy who's the thief suddenly is so powerful that he just kills everyone and goes through the maze and everything. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
He's a skilled also, thief.
That was a failure to adapt D&D, right? Because D&D is about a party.
Yes.
And there's multiple bits where it's like, he has to do this bit alone.
Yeah.
Imagine if you were playing this game. It's like the DM has a crush on this one guy.
That's what I was thinking too. Yeah. The part when he goes by his own. Yeah. Imagine that.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to go in the other room with Steve to do this bit with his character.
Literally. Imagine that. My players would hate me. They would stand up and go.
I do want to bring this up briefly because on another podcast, I think it was Hyrule Field Report, you guys were suggesting who you'd want cast in the Zelda movie. Mm. I would recommend Sophia Lillis, who is in the Honor Among Thieves, who was like the deer lady or whatever.
She was really cool.
I think she's, yeah, I think I want her to be Zelda. I don't know.
Yeah, she'd be a good Zelda.
Yeah. Oh, she's also in Asteroid City. Sure, she could be Link too.
Elf ladies. God, you can say it.
What, like the keys? Oh my God. So the elf lady, she had the nicest, like, how do you say, like the, it's not a corset. It's like
the chest armor. Piece, the armor,
like,
yeah.
The armor, like, there was one scene that, like, she was just standing there.
She was standing at, like, a three-quarters angle.
Yeah, yeah, so I was like, oh, my God, it's so beautiful. Like, I love it. And then at the end, she's wearing the same thing in blue. I wanted it in every color.
She basically had the Venus de Milo as a chest piece.
Yeah.
She just had this, like, ornate pair of tits carved on her
armor. I mean, it looks so, like, editorial.
Yeah.
So, in a way, I like her. And I like, at the end of the movie, remember that I was like, okay, censor the other ones? And I just did this, and I just framed the Empress and the Elf, and I was like, this is fashion.
Mm-hmm.
This is editorial. This is serving something. This has a purpose. Okay, this is cunt. Okay? This is C-U-T-N. Like, yes. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. The rest of them are like, they're okay. But these two, they're doing it. Yeah.
Costumes are not bad here.
Sets are good. Also, the practical sets are good.
Costumes also, are not bad, but they are definitely pre-Lord of the Rings fantasy, where everything looks too new and shiny and off the shelf and doesn't look like people live in this world.
Can I mention something? The two of us mentioned it. Remember when they were like robbing the school or whatever, like the School of Magic, and they were like noisy as hell.
Yeah.
Remember when Snail just grabs a dragon's tooth?
Yeah, he grabs a dragon's tooth, which is like the size of his torso, and he just waves it around like it weighs nothing. Because it's clearly just like a papier-mâché prop.
Why did you take this? And I'm it's just so disconnected from it. It doesn't feel like a party, it doesn't feel like a movie. It feels like a
children's TV production.
Yeah. It's so
amateur. It feels like these are the little scripted bits before we get to that maze and it's a fucking game show on Nickelodeon.
It's the one that Legends of the UPN. Hidden Temple. Yeah. It feels like Legends of the Hidden Temple. That's how
especially like the camera showed us the maze from above and it looked so much like a set.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because they were meant to sit and watch it or whatever.
I wish I'd watched this before The Good One, but that's not how it happened.
Technically I did, but I watched it like 24 years before The Good One. The one thing this has over The Good One, at least Beholder showed up.
Yeah, I was like, oh, it's Kako Demon. Oh, yeah, it's Beholder. Right, of course. And again, influence.
So I think I made my review.
Beholder, Tom Baker's in this. Beholders are based on Daleks.
Oh, shit. Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
I think I made my review 37 minutes in. It said it's late night and I'm tapping out 37 minutes in. I'm back. What do I remember? One, a fabulous but incoherently bellowing Jeremy Irons. Two, bad CGI dragons but good sets. Three, shoehorning in character classes. I could tell they're trying to put the classes in, but yeah, like she forgets magic. It doesn't make any sense. Four, should Marlon Wayans really be here? And my next note is that I'm eating pizza scones. After that... Yeah, they were pretty good.
The end, the dragon like gets Jeremy Irons.
Oh yeah, that was cool.
It's like the scene from Shrek, but the dragon in Shrek looks more real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, he's gonna Shrek him. That's a Shrek. He's gonna be a.
He didn't Shrek himself, and now he's gonna Shrek himself.
He was gonna Shrek it. Yeah, exactly. But then I asked him. Then I was like, okay, who's gonna fuck the dragon now?
the only other important thing I really noted after that is that the council kind of looked like the Muppet Show theater, but with the chairs ripped out. Oh. I like that a lot. And then most of it's just Rod jokes, like Luke's, not Luke, like Mark's summary. It's just. Yeah, every other line's a Rod joke after that. Okay.
It's the universal experience.
You like the Muppet Show reference.
I did put a note in that Jeremy Irons towards the end was a Muppet. Jeremy Irons at the end was just like,
Oh yeah, when he's no longer speaking English. That's why someone showed you that scene. That scene was fantastic. Yes. That almost made it worth watching this piece of garbage.
Oh my god.
I was like, are you trying out for a grindcore band, dude? Like, he just lost it.
Well, he would have succeeded.
And also this council is so easily swayed by anything. It's like, hey guys, we should have cookies on Fridays. Let's have cookies on Fridays.
Huzzah!
Like there's no opposition to anything you say. They just if you get in the front, like, and then you say, guys, we should do this, they're like, yeah, we should do it. Like,
yeah, the Council of Majors is just a frat,
literally.
The thing is, I'm not even sure this filmed before Phantom Menace came out, like, after. I'm not sure this filmed after Phantom Menace came out, because Phantom Menace,
was like 99.
Yeah.
It was like the end of 99, right? Or was it
the to be May. Fair, I don't think this film had a long post-production.
Oh, sure. I didn't find anything.
What was the film we talked about recently that they basically made it in like 9 months? Oh, it's Black Christmas.
Black Christmas, yeah. That was.
It was like he started it in like February and it came out that Christmas, yeah.
It was something that like Jason Blum was called out for not hiring.
That's how Santa works too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they pull Santa in June, like, hey, you gotta do this.
No, he starts in February. Take a month off, get to work. Try to finish by November if you can. That's always good, you know.
Yeah. I mean, these days it's pretty tough for Santa because he's not just fucking carving wooden rocking horses, he's like manufacturing game consoles.
I know, it's all
quality control's a nightmare.
You got the elf there fucking chugging coffee programming the new Mario, like.
Well, you know, with all the wealth disparity. With all the wealth disparity in the world, there's like at least a couple of Teslas they have to make, probably, which you know that they couldn't do a worse job than the actual.
I guess there are like 3 billion kids who are just getting like a fucking potato, so
yeah, that too. It all works out.
The potatoes work better in the newer movie. Yes.
Have we got anything else on the bad Dungeons & Dragons film then?
Hey, Mark, you said you looked a little more, and I just saw it the last thing. What the crap? There's two sequels to this, and you said you learned a little bit more about that?
Yes. Yes, they went directly to Sci-Fi Channel.
All right.
This one already looks Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah, it does.
And the fight choreography was so Power Rangers.
It was.
Oh, sorry. I just stumbled onto this caption on Wikipedia. Most of the stunts were performed by the main cast, including Justin Wallen.
That's so damn funny. Yeah.
He even does like the Pyah! While he's sword fighting.
I have something to read before we get to reviews. This is an AMA that director Courtney Solomon did 11 years ago. I'm going to read you the whole thing. I am Courtney Solomon, award-winning director. That's false. He did not win an award.
He
nominated.
A bunch of Razzies and shit.
Me when I'm
no,
lying,
he was.
I'm
he did
it.
Not because just it was the same year as Battlefield Earth, and Battlefield Earth took all of it. He was nominated for a Stinker Award for worst sense of direction.
Anyway, Stinker.
He was the award-winning director, which is false, of the new action thriller motion picture Getaway, opening today, starring Ethan Hawke and Selena Gomez, rated PG-13. AMA. I believe that movie is rated in the fives. It's like 5.8 or something.
Yeah, he's trending upwards.
Oh, by the way, these Dungeons & Dragons sequels are 4.6 and 4.4 masterpieces compared to this one.
Yeah.
They probably only didn't make the bad list because no one watched them.
Yeah, no one watched them. And also, you know, this movie made it onto How Did This Get Made, which just made a lot of people brigade in the reviews or whatever. Was Selena Gomez as much of a pain in the ass as she looks? I say this from seeing offset footage of her being a snob, pretty much. And Courtney answers, nah, give her a Snickers and she's content for 15 minutes. We needed a lot of Snickerses, though. However, it was worth it as she is phenomenal in the action thriller motion picture Getaway, now in theaters. another comment says, Obama covers his face with meth before going to sleep. He looks at himself in the mirror and contemplates his temporarily white face. Then he cleans, hit his wife, and then gets to sleep next to the bike he's stolen as a kid, thinking of the rest of his life on welfare. Then the third comment says, when did you realize your movie was so good that it would naturally get fawned over on internet message boards without the assistance of hired marketers? And Courtney answers, 1 hour ago. That's it.
What?
The one question about Selena Gomez, a racist comment, and then a comment about, like, is your film good? Yes.
Yep.
Cool. People really also, ate him a...
His account is deleted also.
Nice.
okay.
Oh, wait, that's this is in our circle jerk. This might not be real. Oh, well.
Maybe.
Oh, well, it's real now. No, it's real to us.
Now it's real. Circle jerk. Thanks for internet, you stupid misinformation machine.
Does anybody want to call this a film?
No.
I'll call this a placeholder for the rights for 20 years.
That's all it is. That's a filthy thing to do. See yeah. Warren yeah. Beatty and Dick Tracy again.
That yeah, this really feels like this guy should be in prison for making this.
Like, where did that fucking money go? Because it didn't go on screen. So someone should probably be in prison.
Mm-hmm. I think this is not a film. I mean, making all those dragons in 2000, that probably is. Because think about the other shitty movies we've seen with CGI from that era. Just don't have that many things in them.
Luke, put a pin in this director should go to prison when we get to Rollerball, by the way.
Okay. But like, Dragonheart came out before this. The dragons looked better.
But Jurassic how many dragons Park, were there? Like 100?
Ray Harryhausen movies, the dragons look better.
Like, it's not like the dragons all looked unique.
I am not defending this movie in any way. I'm just saying, if one could argue that there are so many dragons in it that that's where the money went, which
okay,
is not a
then,
good use of money.
Less dragons. Have one dragon. Great, that's cool.
I agree. Well, Jurassic Park had what? Like two dragons? I mean, two dinosaurs in it? Five dinosaurs?
Yeah, it had like a T-Rex, three raptors. Yeah, that's all you need.
Yeah.
Who says D-War's a bad movie now?
I never said that. I love
no,
D-Wars.
No, we
you
didn't.
Know
no, we all loved it. That was the universal you, not specifically you guys.
But like, Godzilla universal Minus Who. One was made like 20 years later for a quarter of the budget and looks phenomenal throughout.
Yeah, but
like,
you know, technology.
This guy, no, but like, I'm just saying in terms of budget, $45 million is a lot of money, especially in the year 2000. There's
also,
no excuse for it to look this shit.
Godzilla Minus One was made by professionals working for an established
studio.
Well,
that's the actual answer, right? Is that this was made? Yeah.
Yeah, the Godzilla rights didn't go to some fucking punk kid who was trying to just invest,
I guess,
a bunch.
I do think this film is dreadful and bad. I do actually respect the gumption of Courtney Solomon.
Oh, yeah, he's a guy with a capital G.
Bullshitting his way into a $45 million movie based on his favorite franchise.
The most recent thing, go ahead. I was going to say the most recent thing, he's produced a lot and most of it is rated under 6. Mm-hmm. The most recent thing he has produced is some kind of remake of Red Sonja and a remake of all three Strangers movies. The Strangers. okay,
strange.
That's all I have to say.
I've heard the name.
But, you know, money guy. He turned into a producer, naturally.
Oh, yeah, because he was already, like, a professional hustler, so...
Yeah, he has that whatever juice to produce garbage. Anyway, Mercy, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to comment about the dragon situation.
Mm.
Like, I told Luke also, like, I think if the dragons are going to be this essential to your movie, just invest all the money you can on them, like, so they can look... nice.
Yeah, like there was a bunch of CGI establishing shots of castles which didn't add anything and looked bad. Cut those. They're not necessary. And then put a bit more money on the dragons.
There's that fucking little goblin
thing that Jeremy Irons uses to spy that is not really explained and looks like shit. Get rid of that. Put the money in the dragons.
Well, the thing to do is never shoot your whole wad. Have one dragon, maybe two dragons. Have one dragon, like, have it show up slowly and in the dark, and you're just like, oh, shit. Like, that's one thing Game of Thrones absolutely did right, is that...
Oh, they teased you on the dragons for seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and mainly when dragons were used, they were, you know, shrouded. And then, okay, maybe the end was nonsense, but still, they still did a decent job with that stuff.
Yeah, by the time they had, like, a shitload of dragon action, you were ready for it, and it was sick.
Yeah.
I think there's ways to do the things they wanted to do, and they didn't do them correctly.
1998 Godzilla came out just a few years before this. Looks way better.
I don't remember, but I don't want to go back and watch it. I think I might rather watch it than this. I'm not really sure.
Sure. It's definitely competently made film. It's Roland Emmerich. It's this.
It's who?
Independence Day and Death of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
So
also,
there are...
like, this film could have just used more puppets and animatronics. No one was saying you have to use CGI dragons.
Year 2000, they kind of suddenly were, maybe. And then we realized that was a really bad idea. Really,
Yeah, you know what fixed that? Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings has loads of animatronics and costumes and puppets.
Yeah,
so they also had more budget.
Yeah, but only twice the budget to do a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, well,
they do that right too.
Know.
It's like,
I don't know about anything about movies or CGI. I'm just talking out of my ass here.
Yeah,
but I'm
anyway. Whatever.
There are a lot of tens for this, by the way, as I'm looking.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of tens. One of them, and this one's, they like it, but they don't love it, so it's not a real 10, but it does have the title D&D Hell's Ball. Yes. So I like that. I got the little old lady review.
Some people just see the name of the thing that they like, and it's like, this must be good.
Nerds.
I don't get it. Yeah, it's like somebody's like, hey, you want to come with me and see Smashing Pumpkins? I'm like, who the fuck is in Smashing Pumpkins? Like Billy Corgan and five randos now or something?
Yeah. Is Smashing Pumpkins the one where he legit advertised on Craigslist once?
Yeah, I think so, for a guitar.
One of the big bands did do that, yeah.
Yeah. I think you're right.
I mean, I kind of respect Journey just like hired a guy who was really good at singing their songs in karaoke or something, like a Filipino guy.
Nice.
And apparently he's fantastic. Like Alice in Chains got a guy who sounded just like their dead singer. Anyway.
I have two reviews to read, I think.
Do it.
One is extra dumb and the other's also kind of dumb.
Love it.
Great. Watch this when it was no one VHS film in Blockbusters with my children. They loved it. Now I got on DVD and my grandchildren enjoyed it. It's a lovely fantasy family film. I still watch it now with the second generation of children. If you enjoy good family fantasy, then this is for you. That sounds like a war crime. They've been made generations of children watch this now. So that's why I want to bring that up.
That sounds like someone with an addiction to cough syrup. I went to Blockbuster. I never wanted
this next one. It should make Mercy twitch a little bit as I read it. Forget D&D, think Doctor Who. This is what I'm talking about, baby. It was awesome. Screw the D&D game anyway. It sucked. And the props in the film were not that bad. I'm talking about the legend himself, Tom Baker, making an appearance, as well as Jeremy Irons' best role next to Die Hard with a Vengeance. I am so sick and tired of you guys not knowing how to have fun with a cool, cheesy movie at the theaters. Not everything has to be Shakespeare, you know. What we have here is simply a fun action fantasy film. I loved every second of this film and would highly recommend it to Doctor Who fans. As for you Dungeons & Dragons game fans, all I can say is better luck next time. Which I guess worked out.
Buddy, go to a therapist. You need to talk to somebody.
That guy went.
Goodness.
Six out of 13 found it helpful.
I wish somebody had done that for Black Christmas in one of the reviews, but they were like, suck it, people who loved the other Black Christmas movies.
Suck it, horror fans. Horror sucks. It's only about Black Christmas. That's kind of how this one reads.
The last thing I saw Jeremy Irons in was House of Gucci, where he did not even bother to attempt an Italian accent.
Sometimes that's the best choice.
That was a weird movie. Do you get anybody see that?
No.
It's on
another one with
Adam Driver and
that's the name. That's the guy's name. I'm trying to remember. Jared and somehow Leto. I couldn't remember Adam Driver or Kylo Ren, so I just completely blanked.
I was about to say, do you mean Jeremy Irons just to be a bastard?
But... That would have been funny. Is that the one with Jeremy Irons?
No, no, it's the other one.
I know the last thing I probably saw Jeremy Irons in before this was watching The Lion King.
Man,
I feel like I've seen that fairly recently.
Looks like he was in the Snyder Cut.
Oh yeah, I forgot he was Alfred in Justice League and Batman vs. Superman.
Adrian Veidt in the Watchmen TV series, which I didn't get very far in because it was
unnecessary and shouldn't exist.
It was depressing. It was like, maybe it shouldn't have existed. Maybe, I don't know. I had mixed feelings about it, but something about it was really depressing.
Like, well, I didn't get there.
Maybe it was supposed to be.
So should we put some butter
on Moore hates it.
And specifically talk about the new one for a few minutes before we cap this off?
Yeah, I think one of the reasons the new one works is because it does embrace what's fun about D&D, where like a lot of the time the characters kind of are just bumbling through, making stupid decisions. It's very much about a party and everyone has a little arc. And it just, like I was saying earlier, like I don't necessarily think D&D as a license, it's not like there's a story to tell or anything. It's just a world in which to have fun and do your own thing. And that's what they did. They're like, okay, we've got Neverwinter, we've got Baldur's Gate, we've got a couple of creatures, but here's just a fun story about some characters and some silliness and some hijinks.
And coming from the other end, of course, it's IP to a certain degree. But me coming in, I don't know Dungeons and Dragons, so I feel like I'm actually watching something different and with a lot of money behind it. Because movies these days is like massive budget IP or quirky tiny film, right?
Right, yeah. So here's something that actually felt original and had some money.
Yeah, which it's been a little while. Yeah.
It reminded me of watching Marvel movies before they were trying to connect everything, which is nice that kind of the genericness of Dungeons & Dragons works in its favor, because then it doesn't feel like tied down by we have to mention Tony Stark. And also, I was glad that they didn't do a thing where at the end it was a bunch of people who were playing and they all went home, because I was worried they were going to do that. And that would be, I'm kind of over that. Like,
I don't want them to do that, but I wouldn't be offended if like the way they did the sequel was like same cast, different roles.
Sure.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be cool.
Because it was sort of like that thing where the Lego movie kind of did that well, but then there wasn't really much of anywhere for it to go after that, the sequel. Even though the sequel was pretty good, but it still felt just incredibly unnecessary.
I mean, some things just exist as a single film, and that's fine, you know?
Yeah.
That's fine, and also it's fine to not have to go meta with everything, and you could just let a story be a story, and if you need to tell another story, then you tell the next story. I mean, that really, that did work for Lord of the Rings, which isn't necessarily fair because all those stories were written like 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And then
when they ran out of steam, they're like, yeah, let's stretch the 150 page one to 3 epic movies.
Yeah. And then coming soon, Silmarillion, 15 hour.
Oh, I thought they stole things from that to fill out The Hobbit. Okay.
I don't know.
No, they stole things from the unfinished tales and stuff for The Hobbit.
Ah, okay.
Really? Silmarillion set like millennia before the rest of it.
Spoiler for episode Way in the Future. I've only read The Hobbit and the Fellowship of the Ring. I've not read anything else related.
I've read The Hobbit, Fellowship of the Ring, Two Towers, and I'm probably going to read Return of the King pretty soon.
Maybe I'll get that. I have
read Fellowship and The Hobbit, weirdly enough.
I love The Hobbit. I was pissed at three movies.
My dad read me The Hobbit when I was a little kid, and I really liked it, and then tried to read me Lord of the Rings, but it was too boring. And then I sort of tried to go back to it every 10 years, and I'm finally old enough to read it.
I was an avid reader, like one of those people who just sit in the library and just shove books into my brain, and that was
same.
That was the bridge too far for me at the time. I was like, ugh.
My friend Jay said, you have to read Lord of the Rings like a bard is telling you this story in a pub. It's not really written like a book.
Yeah. That's interesting. I may go back to it.
But I'm old and buff and boring enough to enjoy it now. It's the same thing that happened with Star Trek The Motion Picture. I hated it as a kid, and then I just grew old enough and boring enough to enjoy it.
Anyway, we're talking
about everything except the film at this point, so I guess.
Well, I just
do you have any thoughts on the new
Dungeons
& Dragons?
I loved it.
Hmm.
I really liked it.
It was fun.
Yeah.
I thought this was
felt
a good...
like a party.
I thought it was a good feather in the cat for Hugh Grant's current, you know, scumbag phase. I support Hugh Grant's scumbag phase, and this was definitely a good one for that.
Yeah. The reason why I like the new one better, I mean, also is better. Like, everything is better. But also, I could feel like, if thinking that it's a Dungeons & Dragons movie, I was like, I can see the players, like, in my mind, being like, oh my God, you have to, I don't know, you have to try subterfuge. Is that how you say? Yeah, subterfuge. You got to lie to this guy. Okay, then throw the die. And I could see the results of the die and just seeing the, how do you say, the consequences, like, in the movie. And I was like, that for me is super enjoyable. I love that. So, but in the old movie, I was like, I see nothing. I don't see it.
Oh, I guess, like, because, yeah, what you're talking about, it's a Dungeons & Dragons thing. It's also just a good storytelling thing.
Yeah, of course.
Where characters, like, make mistakes and fail.
Yeah.
Whereas in the new one, like, whenever he tried to, like, do some kind of stunt or some kind
It was a natural 20 all the time.
Yeah, he was doing, like, backflips and somersaults and shit.
Yeah.
And then, like, when things went wrong, it was just for bullshit reasons.
Yes.
So, I step out of the cave and they've captured all my friends.
Yes, he was getting
But then suddenly
20.
They can fight back.
Yes, he was so getting that 20 plus... The DM is in love with him, with the player, so he gives him everything. And then he's bullying the mage.
Yeah.
And then he's also like, oh, you have to get a nat 20 for this girl. And it's like, okay, then sorry, it doesn't, you know.
She can't do any spells.
Yeah, she gets. So, you know, it's shit. It's bad.
Mm-hmm.
In that context, if I frame it like that.
I like that as a review. Just it's shit. It's bad. Stop.
I love a movie that has no business being as good as it is. Like the Lego movie was another one of those where it's like, why is this so good? I don't know. Has anyone seen Game Night, which is those two directors' previous film, which is sitting at a 6.9?
No.
Nope.
Well, me neither. Anyway,
okay.
supposed to be good. Anyway,
6.9 of good.
6.9.
Well,
nice.
we'll see it maybe one day eventually. Who knows?
That's Mark's review of Game Night. Love I haven't it. Seen it. It's supposed to be good.
Yep.
69.
I'm putting that right now. I'm reviewing it on IMDb. I haven't seen it. It's supposed to be good. 5 out of 10.
That is professional film criticism there.
All right.
We wraps it up. Wrappings. I guess I'll wrap it. I'll wrap today. Oh. I'll wrap it. Oh, I'm wrapping.
Marcy, you got anything to plug?
Me? Yes. My social media. Can you spell it for me?
She is at Marcy Escribe. M-E-R-C-Y. E-S-C-R-I-B-E. She gets me to spell it because she tries to do the Spanish letters when she does spelling.
That's for us.
Right.
We're on Patreon. Podcastia. You get it early. You get some extra chitter chatter. You get Time Enough Podcast about the Twilight Zone. Podcast 1999 about Space 1999. Luke Loves Pokemon about Pokemon. Hyrule Field Report about Zelda. Game shows about gamers gaming each other to play the game.
Incredible.
Don't hate the game, hate the players, right?
Yeah.
Literally.
I'm really excited to hear the one we just recorded last night. That's just me and Andy bullying Mass. He tried to do his own version of the puzzler and we just were not having it.
If you're wondering why I'm laughing so hard at that, you listeners, you should listen to Game Show more.
So how do you DM out of a podcast?
Everyone's tired and sleepy. Just like, I guess we'll just leave it here. I'll see you next week. Or whatever.
I'm gonna hand you a D20. I'm gonna hand you a D20. I need you to roll 22.
Okay, I rolled a 22.
Okay, it's over.
There's no modifiers. Just roll a 22.
Yep.
He's bored.
That's role playing. That's role playing, isn't it? Matt just played the role of someone who could roll a 22 with a 20-sided die.
Incredible. He convinced me, you see? That's a really good
skill check.
Bad at math.
candle's reflection, divinity observed in a dream's direction, walk the mandala's depths, reminiscent of a psilocybin. Reminiscent of a psilocybin.